Chapter 44. As something so ugly, dangerous, and absurd, the difficulty of ever freeing himself from the toils of that complication so insoluble, that the idea of going back, and, as he termed it to himself, confessing to Counselor Mikulin flashed through his mind. Go back? What for? Confess? To what? Have been speaking to him with the greatest openness, he said to himself with perfect truth. How else could I tell him? That I have undertaken to carry a message to that brute Zamyanich? Establish a false complicity, and destroy what chance of safety I have won for nothing, what folly! Yet he could not defend himself from fancying that Counselor Mikulin was, perhaps, the only man in the world able to understand his conduct. To be understood appeared extremely fascinating. On the way home he had to stop several times. All his strength seemed to run out of his limbs, and in the movement of the busy streets, isolated as if in a desert, he remained suddenly motionless for a minute or so, before he could proceed on his way. He reached his rooms at last, then came an illness, something in the nature of a low fever, which all at once removed him to a great distance from the perplexing actualities, from his very room, even. He never lost consciousness. He only seemed to himself to be existing languidly somewhere very far away from everything that had ever happened to him. He came out of this state slowly, with an effect, that is to say, of extreme slowness, though the actual number of days was not very great. And when he had got back into the middle of things, they were all changed, subtly and provokingly in their nature. Inanimate objects, human faces, the landlady, the rustic servant girl, the staircase, the streets, the very air. He tackled these changed conditions in a spirit of severity. He walked to and fro to the university, ascended stairs, paced the passages, listened to lectures, took notes, crossed courtyards in angry aloofness, his teeth set hard till his jaws ached. He was perfectly aware of madcap Kostya gazing like a young retriever from a distance, of the famished student with the red drooping nose, keeping scrupulously away as desired, of 20 others, perhaps, he knew well enough to speak to. And they all had an air of curiosity and concern, as if they expected something to happen. His can't last much longer, thought Razumov more than once. On certain days he was afraid that anyone addressing him suddenly in a certain way would make him scream out insanely a lot of filthy abuse. Often, after returning home, he would drop into a chair in his cap and cloak and remain still for hours holding some book he had got from the library in his hand, or he would pick up the little penknife and sit there scraping his nails endlessly and feeling furious all the time, simply furious. "This is impossible," he would mutter suddenly to the empty room. Fact to be noted. This room might conceivably have become physically repugnant to him, emotionally intolerable, morally uninhabitable. But no. Nothing of the sort, and he had himself dreaded it at first, nothing of the sort happened. On the contrary, he liked his lodgings better than any other shelter he, who had never known a home, had ever hired before. He liked his lodgings so well that often, on that very account, he found a certain difficulty in making up his mind to go out. It resembled a physical seduction such as, for instance, makes a man reluctant to leave the neighborhood of a fire on a cold day. For as, at that time, he seldom stirred except to go to the university, what else was there to do? It followed that whenever he went abroad he felt himself at once closely involved in the moral consequences of his act. It was there that the dark prestige of the Alden mystery fell on him, clung to him like a poisoned robe it was impossible to fling off. He suffered from it exceedingly, as well as from the conversational, commonplace, unavoidable intercourse with the other kind of students. Hay must be wondering at the change in me, he reflected anxiously. He had an uneasy recollection of having savagely told one or two innocent, nice enough fellows to go to the devil. Once a married professor, he used to call upon formerly addressed him in passing: colon, how is it we never see you at our Wednesdays now, Kirillo Sidorovich? Razumov was conscious of meeting this advance with odious, muttering boorishness. The professor was obviously too astonished to be offended. All this was bad. And all this was Alden, always Alden, nothing but Alden, everywhere Alden. A moral specter infinitely more effective than any visible apparition of the dead. It was only the room through which that man had blundered on his way from crime to death, that his specter did not seem to be able to haunt. Not, to be exact, that he was ever completely absent from it, but that there he had no sort of power. There it was Razumov who had the upper hand, in a composed sense of his own superiority. A vanquished phantom, nothing more. Often in the evening, his repaired watch faintly ticking on the table by the side of the lighted lamp, Razumov would look up from his writing and stare at the bed with an expectant, dispassionate attention. Nothing was to be seen there. He never really supposed that anything ever could be seen there. After a while he would shrug his shoulders slightly and bend again over his work. For he had gone to work, and, at first, with some success. His unwillingness to leave that place, where he was safe from Alden, grew so strong that at last he ceased to go out at all. From early morning till far into the night he wrote for nearly a week, never looking at the time, and only throwing himself on the bed, when he could keep his eyes open no longer. Then, one afternoon, quite casually, he happened to glance at his watch. He laid down his pen slowly. At this very hour, was his thought, the fellow stole unseen into this room, while I was out. And there he sat quiet as a mouse perhaps in this very chair. Razumov got up, and began to pace the floor steadily, glancing at the watch now and then. This is the time, when I returned and found him standing against the stove, he observed to himself. When it grew dark he lit his lamp. Later on he interrupted his tramping once more, only to wave away angrily the girl who attempted to enter the room with tea, and something to eat on a tray. And presently he noted the watch pointing at the hour of his own going forth into the falling snow on that terrible errand. Complicity, he muttered faintly, and resumed his pacing, keeping his eye on the hands as they crept on slowly to the time of his return. And, after all, he thought suddenly, I might have been the chosen instrument of Providence. This is a manner of speaking, but there may be truth in every manner of speaking. What if that absurd saying were true in its essence? He meditated for a while, then sat down, his legs stretched out, with stony eyes, and with his arms hanging down on each side of the chair like a man totally abandoned by Providence, desolate. He noted the time of Alden's departure, and continued to sit still for another half hour, then muttering, and now to work, drew up to the table, seized the pen and instantly dropped it under the influence of a profoundly disquieting reflection: colon, there's 3 weeks gone by, and no word from Mikulin. What did it mean? Was he forgotten? Possibly. Then why not remain forgotten, creep in somewhere? Hide. But where? How? With whom? In what hole? And was it to be forever, or what? But a retreat was big with shadowy dangers. The eye of the social revolution was on him, and Razumov for a moment felt an unnamed and despairing dread, mingled with an odious sense of humiliation. Was it possible that he no longer belonged to himself? This was damnable. But why not simply keep on as before? Study. Advance. Work hard as if nothing had happened, and first of all win the silver medal, acquire distinction, become a great reforming servant of the greatest of states. Servant to, of the mightiest homogeneous mass of mankind with a capability for logical, guided development in a brotherly solidarity of force and aim such as the world had never dreamt of. The Russian nation. Calm, resolved, steady in his great purpose, he was stretching his hand towards the pen, when he happened to glance towards the bed. He rushed at it, enraged, With a mental scream, colon, it's you, crazy fanatic, who stands in the way. He flung the pillow on the floor violently, tore the blankets aside. Dot, nothing there. And, turning away, he caught for an instant in the air, like a vivid detail in a dissolving view of two heads, the eyes of General T, and of Privy Councillor Miquelon side by side fixed upon him, quite different in character, but with the same unflinching and weary, and yet purposeful expression. Servants of the nation. Razumov tottered to the washstand very alarmed about himself, drank some water, and bathed his forehead. His will pass and leave no trace, he thought confidently. I'm all right. But as to supposing that he had been forgotten, it was perfect nonsense. He was a marked man on that side. And that was nothing. It was what that miserable phantom stood for which had to be got out of the way. If one only could go and spit it all out at some of them, and take the consequences. He imagined himself accosting the red-nosed student, and suddenly shaking his fist in his face. From that one, though, he reflected, there's nothing to be got, because he has no mind of his own. He's living in a red democratic trance. Ah! You want to smash your way into universal happiness, my boy. I will give you universal happiness, you silly, hypnotized ghoul, you. And what about my own happiness, eh? Haven't I got any right to it, just because I can think for myself? And again, but with a different mental accent, Razumov said to himself, I am young. Everything can be lived down. At that moment he was crossing the room slowly, intending to sit down on the sofa and try to compose his thoughts. But before he had got so far, everything abandoned him. Hope, courage, belief in himself, trust in men. His heart had, as it were, suddenly emptied itself. It was no use struggling on. Rest, work, solitude, and the frankness of intercourse with his kind were alike forbidden to him. Everything was gone. His existence was a great cold blank, something like the enormous plain of the whole of Russia leveled with snow, and fading gradually on all sides into shadows and mists. He sat down, with swimming head, closed his eyes, and remained like that, sitting bolt upright on the sofa, and perfectly awake for the rest of the night, till the girl bustling into the outer room with the samovar thumped with her fist on the door, calling out, Kirillo Sidorovich, please. It is time for you to get up. Then, pale like a corpse obeying the dread summons of judgment, Razumov opened his eyes and got up. Nobody will be surprised to hear, I suppose, that when the summons came he went to see Councillor Miquelon. It came that very morning, while, looking white and shaky, like an invalid just out of bed, he was trying to shave himself. The envelope was addressed in the little attorney's handwriting. That envelope contained another, superscribed to Razumov, in Prince K.'s hand, with the request lease forward under cover at once in a corner. The note inside was an autograph of Councillor Miquelon. The writer stated candidly that nothing had arisen which needed clearing up, but nevertheless appointed a meeting with Mr. Razumov at a certain address in town which seemed to be that of an oculist. Razumov read it, finished shaving, dressed, looked at the note again, and muttered gloomily, Oculist. He pondered over it for a time, lit a match, and burned the two envelopes and the enclosure carefully. Afterwards he waited, sitting perfectly idle, and not even looking at anything in particular till the appointed hour drew near, and then went out. Whether, looking at the unofficial character of the summons, he might have refrained from attending to it is hard to say. Probably not. At any rate, he went. But, what's more, he went with a certain eagerness, which may appear incredible till it is remembered, that Councillor Miquelon was the only person on earth with whom Razumov could talk, taking the Alden adventure for granted. And Alden, when once taken for granted, was no longer a haunting, falsehood-breeding specter. Whatever troubling power he exercised in all the other places of the earth, Razumov knew very well that at this oculist's address he would be merely the hanged murderer of M.P. and nothing more. for the dead can live only with the exact intensity and quality of the life imparted to them by the living. So Mr. Razumov, certain of relief, went to meet Counselor Mikulin with the eagerness of a pursued person welcoming any sort of shelter. This much said, there is no need to tell anything more of that first interview, and of the several others. To the morality of a Western reader, an account of these meetings would wear perhaps the sinister character of old legendary tales, where the enemy of mankind is represented holding subtly mendacious dialogues with some tempted soul. It is not my part to protest. Let me but remark that the evil one, with his single passion of satanic pride for the only motive, is yet, on a larger modern view, allowed to be not quite so black as he used to be painted. With what greater latitude, then, should we appraise the exact shade of mere mortal man, with his many passions and his miserable ingenuity in error, always dazzled by the base glitter of mixed motives, everlastingly betrayed by a short-sighted wisdom? Counselor Mikulin was one of those powerful officials who, in a position not obscure, not occult, but simply inconspicuous, exercise a great influence over the methods, rather than over the conduct of affairs. A devotion to church and throne is not in itself a criminal sentiment. To prefer the will of one to the will of many does not argue the possession of a black heart, or prove congenital idiocy. Counselor Mikulin was not only a clever, but also a faithful official. Privately he was a bachelor with a love of comfort, living alone in an apartment of 5 rooms luxuriously furnished, and was known by his intimates to be an enlightened patron of the art of female dancing. Later on the larger world first heard of him in the very hour of his downfall, during one of those state trials which astonish and puzzle the average plain man who reads the newspapers, by a glimpse of unsuspected intrigues. And in the stir of vaguely seen monstrosities, in that momentary, mysterious disturbance of muddy waters, Counselor Mikulin went under, dignified, with only a calm, emphatic protest of his innocence, nothing more. No disclosures damaging to a harassed autocracy, complete fidelity to the secrets of the miserable arcana imperii deposited in his patriotic breast, a display of bureaucratic stoicism in a Russian official's ineradicable, almost sublime contempt for truth. Stoicism of silence understood only by the very few of the initiated, and not without a certain cynical grandeur of self-sacrifice on the part of a cyberite. For the terribly heavy sentence turned Counselor Mikulin civilly into a corpse, and actually into something very much like a common convict. It seems that the savage autocracy, no more than the divine democracy, does not limit its diet exclusively to the bodies of its enemies. It devours its friends and servants as well. The downfall of His Excellency Gregory Grigorovich Mikulin, which did not occur till some years later, completes all that is known of the man. But at the time of M.P.'s murder or execution, Counselor Mikulin, under the modest style of head of department at the General Secretariat, exercised a wide influence as the confidant and right-hand man of his former schoolfellow and lifelong friend, General T. One can imagine them talking over the case of Mr. Razumov, with the full sense of their unbounded power over all the lives in Russia, with cursory disdain, like two Olympians glancing at a worm. The relationship with Prince K was enough to save Razumov from some carelessly arbitrary proceeding, and it is also very probable that after the interview at the Secretariat he would have been left alone. Counselor Mikulin would not have forgotten him. He forgot no one who ever fell under his observation, but would have simply dropped him forever. Counselor Mikulin was a good-natured man, and wished no harm to anyone. Besides, with his own reforming tendencies, he was favorably impressed by that young student, the son of Prince K, and apparently no fool. But as fate would have it, while Mr. Razumov was finding that no way of life was possible to him, Counselor Mikulin's discreet abilities were awarded by a very responsible post, nothing less than the direction of the General Police Supervision over Europe. and it was then, and then only, when taking in and the perfecting of the service which watches the revolutionist activities abroad, that he thought again of Mr. Razumov. He saw great possibilities of special usefulness in that uncommon young man on whom he had a hold already, with his peculiar temperament, his unsettled mind and shaken conscience, a struggling in the toils of a false position. It was as if the revolutionists themselves had put into his hand that tool so much finer than the common bass instruments, so perfectly fitted, if only vested with sufficient credit, to penetrate into places inaccessible to common informers. Providential. Providential. And Prince K, taken into the secret, was ready enough to adopt that mystical view too. Tea will be necessary, though, to make a career for him afterwards, he had stipulated anxiously. H, absolutely. We shall make that our affair, Mikulin had agreed. Prince K's mysticism was of an artless kind, but Counselor Mikulin was astute enough for two. Things and men have always a certain sense, a certain side by which they must be got hold of, if one wants to obtain a solid grasp and a perfect command. The power of Counselor Mikulin consisted in the ability to seize upon that sense, that side in the men he used. It did not matter to him what it was, vanity, despair, love, hate, greed, intelligent pride or stupid conceit, it was all one to him, as long as the man could be made to serve. The obscure, unrelated young student Razumov, in the moment of great moral loneliness, was allowed to feel that he was an object of interest to a small group of people of high position. Prince K was persuaded to intervene personally, and on a certain occasion, gave way to a manly emotion which, all unexpected as it was, quite upset Mr. Razumov. The sudden embrace of that man, agitated by his loyalty to a throne, and by suppressed paternal affection, was a revelation to Mr. Razumov of something within his own breast. "So that was it," he exclaimed to himself. A sort of contemptuous tenderness softened the young man's grim view of his position as he reflected upon that agitated interview with Prince K, the simple-minded, worldly ex-guardsman and senator whose soft gray official whiskers had brushed against his cheek, his aristocratic and convinced father. Was he a whit less estimable, or more absurd than that famine-stricken, fanatical revolutionist, the red-nosed student? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.